Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a PhD degree in public policy, MA degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschool children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Middle of the fourth week of the Tyranny Response Network's drive to help people be freer and to think better. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'd like to welcome you to the program today. Our phone number is 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955 if you'd like to call into the show this morning. We also like to receive your emailed comments and questions, and you may send your email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. This morning we have quite a interesting broadcast because we have such a variety of things to do. There were several news stories on the major wires that occurred overnight and actually yesterday in the afternoon that I'd like to bring up that I thought would be of interest to us. And then we want to delve into a big issue today, the issue of slavery, the slavery issue. And I'll tell you, it's not because we're interested in discussing modern-day slavery. It's because we want to talk about what slavery was really like in the United States of America back around the time, right before the war between the states in the period known as the antebellum, or the time before the war, antebellum America. Well, to begin first, we have several of these news stories. I'd like to quickly go through, just alert you to what's been happening in the world around us that affects the worldview or gives us a different perspective, perhaps, than the Christian worldview. For example, here's a teen reported on Fox News. Zoloft led me to kill my grandparents. Charleston, South Carolina, not too far from the headquarters here of the Tyranny Response Network in Greenville. A teenager who shot and killed his grandparents as they slept is a shy, decent boy who is led to kill by the antidepressant Zoloft, his attorney said, as the boy went on trial. You know, I don't care what the guy's taking. He's not a shy, indecent boy if he shoots his grandparents while they're sleeping in Charleston. I'm sorry. Christopher Pittman, now 15, is being tried as an adult for two counts of murder in the November 2001 slayings of Joe and Joy Pittman with a pump-action shotgun. Their house was set ablaze, and the youth, then 12, drove off in the family car. So a 12-year-old kid shot his two grandparents with a shotgun while they're lying in bed. Defense attorney Andy Vickery said Monday that Zoloft was to blame. This is a case about one drug that has taken three lives. When you hear the case, you will have the power and opportunity to give one back, he said. A shy, decent boy was acting under the influence of a mind-altering drug. Well, you know, I don't know that Zoloft is mind-altering, if it really made him crazy for the moment. I somewhat doubt that. Those of you who are better at internal medicine can give your opinion about this drug, Zoloft. I think it's one of the most popular drugs out there, and it's being used by a lot of people. Probably shouldn't be using it. Nevertheless, from a Christian worldview, we look at problems we don't have our problems in life being determined by our environment or external forces or other things affecting us near as much as our own sinful hearts affect us. And apparently this lawyer doesn't appreciate the fact that not only did God create the world, but he allowed the world to fall into sin when Adam and Eve sinned. And the Christian worldview is simply that from the heart proceeds adulteries, fornications, wickedness, murders, hatred, envy, strife, as this Bible says. These things come from the heart. And when we see wicked behavior like somebody murdering his grandparents with a shotgun while they're in bed, we can say that that is a heart problem. It's pretty hard to really say this is a Zoloft problem. So anyway, bringing that to your attention today, sad, very sad and tragic story, but nevertheless not one caused by the deterministic forces of nature, the environment, and so forth, as the left would want you to believe, the secular humanists and those who teach in public schools, evidently. On another front, we have environmental wacko doctrine once again being heralded in places like Grants Pass, Oregon. The Tyranny Response Unit, by the way, used to be a resident in Grants Pass, Oregon, before he became a freeman there. And Grants Pass, Oregon, is in the southern part of the state, not too far from the California border. And the Fox News says, judge overturns relaxed wolf protections. Grants Pass, Oregon, a federal judge ruled Tuesday that the Bush administration violated the Endangered Species Act when it relaxed protections on many of the nation's gray wolves. Don't you ever wonder why you don't ever have these federal judges accusing the Bush administration of violating parts of the Constitution that say such things as you will not declare war if you're the president, that Congress has to declare war, you will not permit murder to just run rampant as it does through abortion. We're going to go ahead and accuse you of violating your oath to uphold life, liberty, and property of the people in the United States. I wonder why these judges are so hypocritical to only pick out a few pet peeves of the left and not talk about the other violations they have of the Constitution. How about involvement in the UN and the sovereignty of the nation, of America? This is certainly a treasonous act by not only Supreme Court justices, but by the President of the United States. There is simply no... there's no permission for this sort of activity in the Constitution. Violation of the Bill of Rights through the Patriot Act. Where does the president get this power from? I mean, why don't we have these federal judges, instead of talking about violating the Endangered Species Act, talking about his constitutional violations, Mr. George W. Bush? The news story continues. The decision by U.S. District Judge Robert E. Jones in Portland rescinds a rule change that allows ranchers to shoot wolves on site if they are attacking livestock, said Michael Robinson of the Center for Biological Diversity, an environmentalist group. In April 2003, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service divided the wolves' range into three areas and reclassified the eastern and western populations as threatened instead of endangered. Well, probably aren't that many wolves out there in Oregon that are causing this kind of grief, perhaps. But I'll tell you what, if I were a rancher in eastern Oregon and I had my money on the line and some wolf was coming down to eat the sheep, I think a 30-06 or some other long-range rifle with a scope would be a very effective tool in deterring the beast. Unfortunately, the government doesn't agree. They don't care about those people's livestock, income, property, anything else. They're more interested in their liberal, lunatic agenda, and that's what we're seeing here in the Oregon courts. No surprise out of Oregon, by the way, not a friend to liberty in most things, other than carrying guns concealed. They do seem to still like guns in Oregon. Everything else has pretty much gone the way of the leftist. Pentagon says sex bombed et al., mostly folly. Now, this is rather strange. This Fox News report by Kelly Vlachos. Washington, those who complain the military should make love, not war, may be happy to know that on at least one occasion, military scientists were searching for ways to break down the enemy with aching desire. Known as the sex bomb, in a saucier headlines, the gay bomb, scientists considered developing a chemical weapon with aphrodisiac qualities that would make enemy soldiers hopelessly physically attractive to one another so as to paralyze their ranks and destroy morale. Folks, I'm not even going to read the rest of this article. This is just twisted. I mean, what is going on in the Department of Defense that we would get such a twisted idea in somebody's mind, any rate? I mean, there are certain things you just don't do as a not only a moral or ethical person, but just out of respect for other human beings being created in the image of God, and especially if you realize they're thrust into an army by force under something like Saddam Hussein. Listen, this is uncalled for. There's no reason to degrade people or try to force them to be homosexuals or whatever and part of our warfare. It's just rather disgusting that this sort of stuff goes on. As far as the Christian worldview goes, it's out the window as far as the Pentagon and the Department of Defense are concerned. I was just shocked when I saw that story. Who would ever come up with such a lunatic idea? well, apparently those in the Department of Defense under the Bush administration. The great Christian George W. Bush, the born-again guy who's going to go out and preach righteousness in the land and help bring in the kingdom of God. That's what all you who voted for George Bush thought, didn't you? He was going to be the one who would do better than John Kerry. Well, is he really? Do you have less abortion? Did John Kerry come up with the sex bomb idea? Think about it, folks. Christian Wright has been gullible enough to vote for this man, and you're not going to get any better results than you did the first 4 years. You're going to have bigger government, you're going to have fewer rights, and you're going to have more tyranny in the land, as we always have had and with him, and we can only expect the same thing in the future. We've got some more stories coming up in just a minute. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute after a break on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
Welcome back to the program. This is Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. Continuing with another interesting story that has a relationship to the Christian worldview. Fox News reports that a Colorado professor's future is on the line. Denver, a panel discussion at Hamilton College in New York featuring a Colorado professor was canceled after hundreds of death threats poured in because of an inflammatory essay he wrote comparing some of the September 11th victims to Nazis and calling President Bush a terrorist. In fact, on the page of this article he wrote, this Ward Churchill fellow wrote, it says, has a picture of George Bush speaking, and then it says international at the top and terrorist right below. Hamilton has been on heightened security since the paper by Ward Churchill, published more than 2.5 years ago in the aftermath of the 2001 attacks, resurfaced. College spokesman Michael DiBraggio said multiple death threats were made against both school officials and Churchill, who was to be a guest speaker at the panel discussion. Churchill resigned Monday as chairman of the Ethnic Studies Department at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and the Board of Regents there is holding an emergency meeting to discuss his future. That means he's a tenured faculty member there, so if he's no longer chairman, that just gives him a little less administrative stuff to do. Unless they can accuse this guy of a crime, which at the place a commie outfit like the University of Boulder could do, they can't really remove that faculty member. Nevertheless, it is interesting that in America, the First Amendment rights that people have are restricted to those who have leftist points of view. If you try to renounce tyranny or even make these comments like this professor did, then you become the subject of terror yourself and tyranny. Your life needs to be put out because First Amendment rights only apply to certain aspects of the ideological spectrum. Otherwise, you get death threats, which is the typical response of the left, by the way. If they don't agree with you and you're a powerful voice, the first thing they want to do is threaten to kill you, because that's their mode of operation. It's always been that way, from Hitler to Stalin to Pol Pot, Mao Zedong. These people were all leftists who loved to kill people who got in their way. Well, I don't know, and maybe some of you have some comments today to talk about this professor's idea. You're welcome to call the show at 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We also welcome your questions and comments by email, and you may send them to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Well, I don't know about the veracity of what this professor is saying. I don't know if it's true or not in every detail. I did pick up, through the link there, a copy of some of the things that that he'd written, and I'll read you some excerpts from that. It's a rather long piece, so obviously we can't read the whole thing on the air. But here's basically what he says. On the morning of September 11th, a few more chickens, along with some 500,000 dead Iraqi children, came home to roost in a very big way at the Twin Towers in New York's World Trade Center. Well, actually, a few of them seemed to have nestled in the Pentagon, at the Pentagon as well. The Iraqi youngsters, all of them under 12, died as predictable, in fact, widely predicted result of the 1991 U.S. surgical bombing of their country's water purification and sewer facilities. Why would you bomb that, George? As well as other infrastructural targets on which Iraq's civilian population depends for its very survival. And if the nature of the bombing were not already bad enough, it should have been noted that this sort of aerial warfare constitutes a Class 1 crime against humanity, entailing myriad gross violations of international law, as well as every conceivable standard of civilized behavior. Well, you've got to remember, folks, that we're talking about using sex bombs to make people turn into homosexuals temporarily, so I suppose that that's not a whole lot out of character for George Bush and his cronies, or any government agency or state agency today, to use uncivilized behavior in their warfare tactics. But anyway, the death toll has already been steadily ratcheted up by the U.S. to impose sanction for a decade now, enforced all the while by massive military presence and periodic bombing raids. The embargo has greatly impaired the victims' ability to import the nutrients, medicines, and other materials necessary to saving the lives of even their toddlers. All told, Iraq has a population of about 18 million. The 500,000 kids lost to date thus represent something on the order of 25% of their age group. Indisputably, the rest have suffered and are still suffering a combination of physical debilitation and psychological trauma severe enough to prevent their ever fully recovering. In fact, an entire generation has been obliterated. Well, I'll stop the reading there. If some of you have some comments about that or would like to discuss that on the air, we'd be happy to do so on the Tyranny Response Network, 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955. This is an article by Ward Churchill called "Some People Push Back on the Justice of Roosting Chickens." He's been very critical of the U.S. policy in Iraq, calling George Bush an international terrorist, and basically saying that, you know, what do you expect on the September 11th attacks when you go ahead and slaughter off, you know, this many people? Now, this number, like 500,000 people, innocent civilians that have died over there since the first Gulf War all the way through the present, is questionable. I mean, some people would say, oh, it's much lower than that. I've heard numbers even like 100,000. I've heard some people, like another colleague of mine in the Times Examiner, Tony Beam, say that, well, it's only been a few thousand. Now, I don't know who's denying reality or where people are getting the data from, but there's a lot of people have been killed. And it seems very unlikely that the number that Tony Beam mentioned, a few thousand, 2,000, 3,000, is likely, simply because of the fact of the massive bombings that were done over Baghdad and Kuwait and other places in the 1991 era. We had just so many people blanketed with bombs that there's just very unlikely that we had just a few casualties like they were claiming. But nevertheless, there is some debate about it, and I don't know for sure. I wasn't there. I haven't counted the bodies. I just tell you that you hear varying numbers from just a few thousand up to a million. I think there one time the official Iraqi government report was a million people had been killed, innocent people, and there are at least several hundred thousand soldiers that were killed. I think everybody pretty much admits that that much of the army was slaughtered. Hard to believe, again, that the number of civilian casualties would be so low if that much of the army was slaughtered off. Well, at any rate, this is this fellow's opinion. He thinks George Bush is a terrorist. He thinks that what's been happening has just been wrong in Iraq. If you have a comment about that, please do give us your opinion at 864-201-6955, 864-201-6955, or by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. Interesting topic, folks, and we'd like to talk about that from a Christian worldview. Again, from a Christian worldview, how do we interpret this sort of things? If it's true that many innocent people have been killed, we have to say that this is a wrong-headed war. Christians are to be peacemakers in the world. Yes, we do have to take up the sword to defend ourselves. I think that we can make a case for that. But to actually make the case of going out and slaughtering innocent people under the guise of wanting to go after one or two or five or 100 government leaders is simply wrong. We cannot slaughter off innocent people, especially not those among those who might be Christians. Not to say we have a special favoritism towards them, except that the Bible does say we should do good to all men, especially those of the household of faith in Galatians chapter 6. So if that's the case, we've done a great evil in Iraq by slaughtering so many innocent people. If it's not really the case that we've slaughtered that many innocent people, well, let's bring it up and talk about it. Be happy to do so and be looking forward to getting your calls. Remember, if you're not listening to the show between 7:30 and 9 o'clock in the morning Eastern time, you're listening to a recorded version of the broadcast, and we're happy that you're doing so. On our front page of policyofliberty.net, we have a link that allows you to listen to the show, the recorded broadcast for the last 3 days, as well as one special broadcast. And people listen all over the United States and the world to the broadcast, and we're grateful for that. We appreciate your comments after the show hours by email only to questions@policyofliberty.net. We're going to have a quick break coming up here. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and you're listening to the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast. But we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is, non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your non-profit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to the program. This is Dr. John Coben. We've been reading a little bit of P.J. O'Rourke every day for the last week or so, and P.J. O'Rourke is a humorist, a satirical commentator on politics, and we enjoy reading much of what he has to say. Much of what he has to say is not for the average reader, especially not for the average Christian. So beware if you pick up one of his books, not to go too deep if you're going to easily be offended by certain comments. P.G. O'Rourke is obviously not a believer, although he does have a lot of to offer in terms of his understanding of economics and politics. P.G. O'Rourke says, in just a few quips, from his book about 15 years ago, Holidays in Hell, what would be a road hazard anywhere else in the third world is probably the road. He also says Italy is not technically part of the third world, but no one has told the Italians. He says Moscow has changed. I was here in 1982, especially during the Brezhnev twilight, and things are much better now. For instance, they've got litter. In 1982, there was nothing to litter with. And he also says the entire Soviet service economy is conducted in geological time. That's if you're have a Darwinian understanding of the world, I suppose, or an age-day understanding of the world. You happen to believe the Earth is very old. They move very slowly. He also says, I'd like to end a book a lot of ways, except I don't have any answers. Use your common sense. Be nice. This is the best I can do. All the trouble in the world is human trouble. Well, that's not true. But when cancer cells run amok and burst out of the prostate and take over the liver and the lymph glands and end up killing everything in the body, including themselves, they certainly are acting like some humans we know. And that's what, from his book, All the Trouble in the World, A Lighter Side of Famine, Pestilence, Death, and Destruction. Well, next topic up for grabs is something from the, we have a couple of stories here. I'm wondering which one we should do next. We've just got a few minutes. I'm going to go ahead and skip ahead to a Chuck Colson story. It's called Breakpoint with Chuck Colson, Life and Options in Suburbia. This commentary was delivered February 1st by Prison Fellowship President Mark Earley. He says, besides reviving ABC Television's fortunes, Desperate Housewives led all television programs in Golden Globe nominations. The show is at the near the top of the ratings and is the most popular program among the coveted 18 to 49 female demographic. Now, I'll have to say, the Tyranny Response Unit, that's me, Dr. John Coben, does not have a television in the house, for not just because there are immoral things on there like this this Desperate Housewives, but mainly because it's an inefficiency. It's a terrible waste of time for everybody, and I don't enjoy being preached to by the state and its agents, basically, in the mass media. For some of you, however, that have televisions in your homes, no judgment passed whatsoever on you folks. You go right ahead and utilize your liberty. You may have seen some of this Desperate Housewives. Now, I'm not sure why anybody who owns a television would actually look up in the guide and see that there's a show called Desperate Housewives operating, and for any more than 2 minutes turn the thing on. But perhaps some of you have actually seen an episode of this. It sounds like it's a very rank and vile show, typical of the non-Christian secular humanist view promoted by public or government schooling today, by the mass media and by organizations of the feminist gay rights and other sorts of ungodly institutions in our land. Now, having said all that, I'll continue the story here from Mr. Early. It seems that the only thing that the show can't do is help the audience understand why some housewives are desperate. Desperate Housewives, of course, tells a story of four friends living on a suburban street called Wisteria Lane. Their personal lives are a mess, and their families are, if anything, even worse. So as television characters often do, they try to fill their vacuums with illicit pleasures, drug abuse, promiscuity, and adultery. It is obviously the stuff of soap operas, yet there's an important, if inadvertent, cultural point made. It's really difficult for American women to see marriage and motherhood as a calling these days. That's because our increased affluence means that, unlike their ancestors, most women don't have to worry about their children's physical survival. While that's great, it also makes their contributions to the kids' well-being more intangible. The line connecting what they do at home and their children's welfare isn't as bright as it was for their grandmothers or great-grandmothers. In addition, we live in a culture where an activity's value is measured in almost exclusively economic, not moral or cultural terms. As a result, women caring for their families can be and are made to feel like failures. Despite the statistics that tell us children raised by their mothers and families their mothers and fathers are two to three times less likely to have emotional problems, and boys are one half less to likely to become involved in crime. Fortunately, there is an alternative, one that can give mothers strong sense of significance: homeschooling. The Tyranny Response Unit favors homeschooling, by the way, folks. It is one of the greatest cultural phenomena, especially in the drive for liberty that we've ever had in this country. And desperate housewives, he says, brought it up, but then rejected it out of hand. In the past two decades, have witnessed an explosion in the numbers of Americans who are educating their kids at home. Why? Well, the appeal is that it restores the brightness of the line connecting our efforts to the well-being of our families. Instead of being more consumers of education, we direct our kids' education. Instead of hoping they learn history, we work on it with them. Activities like homeschooling and help us see being a wife and mother is what it is, a calling, not a dead end. Our efforts yield tangible as well as intangible results. This is part of the reason that as of 2003, more than 1.1 million children were being educated at home. And we believe that number, by the way, is probably closer to 3 or 4 million, because most people, that I know at any rate, don't register their kids with homeschooler associations. An increase of 30% in only 4 years. Homeschoolers score higher on tests, a lot higher, like 100 points higher on the SAT on average, over both public school and private schools. And they take academic honors like the Patrick Henry College students, all homeschooled, who recently beat a team at Oxford University in an international debate competition. All this was lost on the creators of Desperate Housewives, unfortunately. Depicting the lives of suburban women as barren wasteland makes for better television. After all, who has time for bed hopping or pill popping when you're planning lessons or correcting homework? Of course, better television isn't synonymous with reality or truth, yet another reminder that if you want to know why you're feeling desperate, the tube is the last place you should look. I agree wholeheartedly. Our worldview as Christians, and anyone who loves liberty for that matter, is completely distorted if we watch the stupid television and get preached to by the imbeciles of the mass media and politics. We've come up against our mid-morning break here on the show. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead, make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of 6 homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
Welcome back to the program. Our phone number here, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. If you're in Greenville or elsewhere and like to join us on the show and have some questions or comments over these very interesting stories that impact or relate to the Christian worldview today, we'll be happy to entertain those calls. You can also email us your questions and comments to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net here at the Tyranny Response Network. Just a reminder, the show is live only from 7:30 to 9 in the morning. If you're calling, and it's Eastern time, if you're listening to the show at another time, don't bother calling in, but do send your emails 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and visit policyofliberty.net and find out all the resources that are there, including current articles by me, my weekly column, books, other great resources, Quotations for Liberty. Pretty soon, sometime this week, you're going to be able to hear Quotations for Liberty from great scholars like Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, George Mason, Davy Crockett, many others from the past, and even more contemporaries like Thomas Sowell, for instance, being read on the air just to remind you of the importance of liberty and what other people think about liberty, freedom, and how the Christian life should be. So stay tuned to the Tyranny Response Network all day. We've got great pre-recorded shows all the time running, but the live show is only Christian Worldview at the moment, and it's only from 7:30 in the morning until 9. So we welcome your phone calls once again. During that time, 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. I'd like to give an applause to homeschool mothers as well as homeschool children. Homeschoolers don't realize how good they've got it sometimes with the kids. And if you're some homeschool kids listening this morning, all I can say is I applaud you for your efforts and that you really have made your parents have helped you make the right choice by being schooled at home. It is more efficient. You'll get done a lot faster. You don't have the homework that other kids are burdened with in the evenings. You'll be able to learn other things during the day. And you will become far better than all of your peers. And when you reach adulthood, you will realize and appreciate far more, perhaps, than you do now, what a blessing it is that you can be homeschooled. And for you mothers out there especially, and fathers who do homeschooling, I applaud you, because the time and effort and dedication that's required to do homeschooling is not a slight or little thing. It shows a great deal of commitment to your families, a great deal of commitment to the values that we cherish as Americans, at least historically, the vision of the founders towards liberty, as well as Christian and moral values that you hold dear in your home. Those things are exemplified by the homeschooling mother or the homeschooling father, and I applaud you for it. I even think of my own wife, who is a physician, and she chooses to work only 2 days per week, maybe 2.5 days per week, so that she can spend the rest of the time with the homeschooling activities of the children. Myself, I also like to contribute a bit, and I get up in early certain days so I can teach economics to some of my older boys, and I also help out with some of the other high school or slash college activities in our homeschool. And it doesn't take that much time, dads. If you just want to put in an hour or two a week, you make a tremendous impact, a tremendous difference in the homeschooled lives of your kids. And I'm able to do that, and I would applaud all others who are able to and have made the sacrifice, so-called sacrifice, of income and the extra car or whatever you might have gotten from having the wife work a couple extra days a week by choosing to homeschool. It's better for your kids, and it's a whole lot better for our nation. Every one of us who love liberty should applaud anybody who's going out of their way to homeschool, get kids out of the indoctrination program offered by the government school and into understanding the truths that we hold so dear, because they will be the ones who change society in the next generation. While the government school kids are sitting there lost, fledgling around in the dark, groping around in the dark, trying to feel their way through life, not having anything to base their worldview on, the homeschoolers will then stand and as shining lights, as leaders, as people who are not encumbered by all the burdens thrust upon them emotionally, psychologically, and otherwise at the government school, or even at some private schools, not all of them, of course, some private schools that are not doing well. Homeschoolers will just be head and shoulders above them, and we will indeed rule and win the day on account of their activities. One of my favorite homeschooled people in history was none other than Thomas Jefferson. And wouldn't it be wonderful if this generation and over the next few years would begin to turn out another Thomas Jefferson to help in the fight for liberty in this great American nation? Hats off to homeschool mothers and fathers. Well, we have a couple other news stories coming in. Speaking of the perversion that comes along and the twisting of the Christian worldview, and I don't know why there are so many stories today relative to other days. It seems like on the Tyranny Response Network on Christian worldview, we end up having maybe two or at most three stories a day on average. But today I just have a plethora of stories regarding the Christian worldview, so I'm going to go ahead and share those with you. This next one comes from Free Market. Let me see, what is the name of this source? I believe it's called Tongue Tied. It's an unusual news source called from Freedom Watch, and Freedom Watch is information pertaining to government abuse of power, trashing of the Constitution, illegal immigration, the Second Amendment, political correctness, and run amok, etc. And you can subscribe to it by going to freedomwatch/subscribe at topica.com. At any rate, what these guys are writing about today is of interest to us. They say, of course, the bright lights of Harvard University have are there bright lights at Harvard University? That's a questionable statement. Anyway, the bright lights of Harvard University have identified another reason for low-performing people to blame society for their problems and not themselves. Stereotype threat. I didn't know there was such a thing as stereotype threat. A press release from the Harvard Mental Health Letter explains that a condition arises when members of a stereotyped group risk doing something that conforms to the dominant culture's typecasting. If their performance coincides even slightly with a demeaning belief, they may be reduced to that stereotype either in the minds of others or in their own minds. The condition, say good doctors at Harvard, can lead to an anxiety-provoking self-consciousness that can deter achievement. And thankfully, they have suggested solutions. Among them, encourage awareness among the subjects that it's society's fault and not theirs, and of course provide plenty of counseling by trained mental health professionals. Listen, folks, they just make the problem worse, and there really isn't a problem other than their own hearts and their indoctrination and folly that have been thrust upon them through their government school. Another example of how the secular humanist tradition leads to chaos, pity, destruction, poverty, and misery in the world. We do not get a great deal of hope out of the secular humanist side, folks. The only hope we have in this world is Jesus Christ. In fact, not only his return, but right now, if you, in faith, turn to Christ and trust in him and only in his grace for your salvation, he will save you. And that is hope, folks. You don't have to do any good works. You don't have to worry about every little detail of your life. I mean, I'm not saying that you can just run amok and live any way you want. I'm just telling you that there is a way prepared by God that you might be saved and be delivered from all these dilemmas in life, all these problems that people face psychologically, internally, and so forth, and it's through our Lord Jesus Christ. And we would encourage you at the Tyranny Response Network on Christian Worldview, especially, to turn to Christ today and receive him as your Lord and Savior. Well, we've come up against another break again, and this is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to TRN. Warning, Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Disinfecting the modern mainstream media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
And here we have P.J. O'Rourke reminding us that Saigon is like all of the great modern cities of the world. It's the mess left from people getting rich. Isn't that a great way to describe what a city is, or industrial sectors of a town? It's the mess left from people trying to get rich. That's like other great cities, modern great cities of the world. He also says sloths move at the speed of congressional debate, but with greater deliberation and less noise. Ha 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 ha. Good comments, PJ, as usual. Well, MSNBC on the internet has a story today on education. In fact, we have a couple stories on education, one from MSNBC, another from the Manhattan Institute, a free market think tank in New York, a fellow named J.P. Green. We'll read both of them here. The MSNBC News reports that First Amendment is no big deal, students say. Well, I'll tell you what, even before I read this article, on the Tyranny Response Network, we like the First Amendment. We believe that Americans have a right to free speech, that they should be able to think and say what they believe and what is true, and without being without fear of oppression or suppression by the state or by whatever agents or leftists are allowed to run amok in the society. This fellow from Colorado, even if I read his entire article we read earlier about being George Bush being a terrorist and so forth, should be heard. I don't think he should be threatened, his life should be threatened, or the lives of those who allow him to speak be threatened because he doesn't agree with the left. First Amendment rights are important to us here, and obviously we are a station dedicated to free speech and opposing the modern mainstream media. What other station can you turn your radio dial to right now and hear the kinds of talk that we're talking about on our show? It's much different than what you get anywhere else. You're welcome to join the discussion, by the way, by calling 864-201-6955. That's 864-201-6955. We'll be happy to receive those phone calls and discuss them on the air with you. We also would welcome your emailed questions and comments, and you may send them to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. MSNBC News, as it says, First Amendment is no big deal, students say. Study shows American teenagers indifferent to freedoms. Washington, the way many high school students see it, government censorship of newspapers may not be a bad thing, and flag burning is hardly protected free speech. It turns out the First Amendment is a second-rate issue to many of those nearing their own adult independence, according to a study of high school attitudes released Monday. Folks, guess what? This may be of government high school attitudes. It's not true, I don't think, of homeschoolers who are in their high school program or even in Christian schools. The original amendment to the Constitution is the cornerstone of the way of life in the United States, promising citizens the freedoms of religion, speech, and press and assembly. Yet, when told of the exact text of the First Amendment, more than one of the three high school students said it goes too far in the rights it guarantees. Only half of the students said newspapers should be allowed to publish freely without government approval of stories. Do you see the success the government school is having in indoctrinating people? If this is true, just think about the ramifications of this, folks. I mean, the left would love nothing better than to get rid of the Bill of Rights. And here, the high school students have been so desensitized or dumbed down or trained in the way of the left and secular humanist religion that they don't even care about the First Amendment rights that they have. They have too many rights. Well, what do we need all those rights for? We have a benevolent, benign state that's going to go out of its way to care for the people. All we need to do is give centralized control to the government. They'll care for us. They'll take care of the economic woes. They'll wipe out environmental problems and like global warming and so on and so forth. You know, these kids have bought the great lie. They've been fed a bunch of garbage since they've been small at the government school, and here it's successfully worked out just like the secular humanists had planned. The article continues, "These results are not only disturbing, they are dangerous," said Hodding Carter III, president of the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, which sponsored the $1 million study. "Ignorance about the basics of this free society is a danger to our nation's future." Yes, and so is the entire public or government school program, folks. That's why it needs to be obliterated. The best reform you could have in the public school is to completely raze every campus to the ground, tell all the kids to go home and get educated elsewhere and make the parents be responsible for it and not have any more funding, including all the onerous property tax funding, for public education. What a joke. "The students are even more restrictive in their views," the article continues, "than their elders," the study says. When asked whether people should be allowed to express unpopular views, 97% of teachers and 99% of school principals said yes. Only 83% of students did. Indifference, misunderstanding. The results reflected indifference, with almost 3 in 4 students saying they took the First Amendment for granted or didn't know how they felt about it. It was also clear that many students do not understand what is protected by the bedrock of the Bill of Rights. 3 in 4 students said flag burning is illegal. It's not. About half the students said the government can restrict any indecent material on the Internet. It can't. Schools don't do enough to teach the First Amendment. Students often don't know their rights, the rights it protects, Linda Potry, executive director of the Journalism Education Association, said in the report. This all comes at a time when there is decreasing passion for much of anything, and you have to be passionate about the First Amendment. Well, we are passionate about the First Amendment here, as well as the rest of the Bill of Rights, like the Second Amendment, the right to keep and bear arms. Why? So you can go on hunting trips. No, excuse me. So we can revolt when necessary against tyrannical government. Well, right now, our entire foundations are being undermined by the work of the government school. I've been against the government school and one who attacks its policies and its idea for many years. If you get a copy of my book, and I would encourage you to do so, Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, you'll read my very strong opinions and why public schooling or government schooling is an evil in this land, and why Christians should have nothing to do with it in Chapter 6. I would encourage you to find that book at policyofliberty.net. At the top, there'll be a blinking link to Alertness Books. Go to that link, and you'll find either the downloadable version for $4 or the paperback version for $11 plus shipping available to you there on the website. I would encourage you to pick up a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, and help improve your Christian worldview. This is the Tyranny Response Network. We're coming up against another short break. This is Dr. John Coben with Christian Worldview, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Welcome back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're reading now a New York Post online edition article by J.P. Green of the Manhattan Institute, the free market think tank in New York City, called Wasting the Windfall. The courts may order, says Green, more than a $5 billion a year in added spending on New York City schools without actually boosting student achievement. The problem with that approach, the likely remedy in the campaign for fiscal equity case, is that lack of money is not a primary explanation for the city's low student performance. So throwing even more money at the current system won't help. Only structural reforms like merit pay for teacher can make a real dent in the city schools' failure. We say city schools' failure, but are they really failing? I think Ben Graydon in his Times Examiner article a few weeks ago made a great point. The government schools are succeeding in precisely what they're after. They are dumbing down America, promoting a secular humanist agenda, promoting an alternative lifestyle agenda, promoting anti-biblical and pro-Darwinian themes all the time. And I think they've been very successful, judging from these recent articles we've been reading, like the one just before this, that people don't care about the First Amendment anymore. The Declaration of Independence is already taboo in most schools, universities. They think it's so radical that even reading it, which was the case in one of my courses years ago, was considered just a base thing to do in class. How could you read such a radical document like that? It sounds like you're a revolutionary. The Declaration of Independence should be off limits from schoolrooms, and indeed, I'm sure it is in most places, as it was in that community college where I was teaching. The city now spends $12,000 per student, making it one of the biggest spending districts in the nation. I think homeschool parents on average spend about $200 or $300 per kid, maybe $500 per kid, depending on what you get for them. And what does it get for all that money? Schools so lousy, the court found them unconstitutional. But given the court's order, New York's challenge is to devise ways to spend this new money that will produce better results where previous funding increases have failed. One promising use of new money is to create a real merit pay system. Under such a system, large bonuses for teachers and administrators would be directly linked to increases in student achievement. Well, that would be quite interesting. Almost start paying them like we pay football coaches, I suppose. Of course, Americans are far more interested in college football or football in general than they are in something like education of children. It's just the way the nation has gone, folks. Interesting articles from Jay Green talking about the boost that's coming in the budget of the New York City school system, which is already a total failure, a basket case, in spite of the fact they're spending $12,000 per student per year to completely, utterly fail having abysmal results on academic achievements through the public school system there. Well, we have, turning now to another topic of great interest, is the issue of slavery. We talked about this earlier in the show that we'd be talking about slavery today. I read a quote yesterday, from somebody who is a very important, prominent figure, and I didn't tell you who the author was until after I read it and let you guess a little bit. For the benefit of those that didn't happen to listen to the show yesterday, I'm going to read that again, and then a little bit later in the program, while you're musing about the whole issue of slavery, we're going to disclose who the author of this quotation is. Here is the quote, and Gus sent this in. I appreciate that, Gus, doing a great job in supporting the show and sending emails to help us. He says this, the writer of this quote, or the speaker of this quotation says this: "I will say that I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of bringing about in any way the social and political equality of the white and black races. That I am not, nor ever have been, in favor of making voters or judges of Negroes, nor of qualifying them to hold office, nor to intermarry with white people. And there is a physical difference between the white and black races, which I believe will forever forbid the two races living together on terms of social and political equality. There must be the position of superior and inferior, and I as much as any other man am in favor of having the superior position assigned to the white races." Who said that? It's somebody you all know about, at least you think you know about him. Think who that might be that said that. I'll give you a hint. It's over 100 years ago that was spoken. Well, here we have a story sent to us, while you're musing about that, by Robert M. Grooms. Very interesting article, and it's entitled "Dixie's Censored Subject, Black Slave Owners." Fascinating article. I love learning new things, and I was so appreciative of this email being forwarded to me, the story being forwarded to me by email. This article was originally printed by the Barnes Review. Mr. Grooms says the following: "By an 1856 letter to his wife, Mary Custis Lee, Robert E. Lee called slavery a moral and political evil. Yet he concluded that black slaves were immeasurably better off here than in Africa, morally, socially, and physically. The fact is that large numbers of free Negroes owned black slaves, in fact, in numbers disproportionate to their representation in society at large. In 1860, only a small minority of whites owned slaves. According to the U.S. Census report for that year before the Civil War, that, for those of you who don't know what that is the War of Northern Aggression, there were nearly 27 million whites in the country. Some 8 million of them lived in the slaveholding states. We're coming up against a break here, folks, and we're going to go to that break. When we come back, we're going to continue to read some interesting things here about this. How many of you knew that black people, before the War Between the States, or the War of Northern Aggression, before the Civil War, owned slaves? How many people knew that? Well, we're going to read and find out a little bit more about this this idea of history that has been covered up by the government schools and the media when we return from our break. This is Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, and you're listening to the greatest network on earth, the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
We're back, and we're talking about a very important and interesting historical fact that black people owned slaves before the War of Northern Aggression. In fact, this article we're reading reports that it was very common practice for black people to own other black people as slaves. Very strange phenomenon. We don't hear about these things so readily, do we, in the government schools or even in private Christian schools. It's a sham. What a shame that many private Christian schools, like even Bob Jones, judging from their textbooks, teaches the false history about Abraham Lincoln, that he was a good man, that he helped preserve the Union and freed the slaves and all this sort of thing. And nothing could be further from the truth. Folks, do you know who wrote that particular quote I read right before the break? Who said that? And it was in a September 16th, 1864 speech that Abraham Lincoln declared those things. He is the racist. He's the one who did not want to, or wanted a superior position assigned to white people over black people. Interesting enough. And that was posted at the federal government's national monument at Fort Sumter. It's on a plaque, emblazoned on a plaque on the wall of that monument. You can see it in Charleston if you go down there today. Interesting enough. At any rate, just to recapitulate here, according to the U.S. Census report for the last year before the Civil War, or the War Between the States, the War of Northern Aggression, there were nearly 27 million whites in the country. Some 8 million of them lived in the slave-holding states. The census also determined, and before I go on, all states used to be slaveholding. It was only by peaceful means, some states in the North gave up that institution, that domestic institution. The rest of them had to give it up by force. The census also determined that there were fewer than 385,000 individuals who owned slaves. Even if all slaveholders had been white, that would only amount to 1.4% of whites in the country, or 4.8% of Southern whites owning one or more slaves. So how do we justify a war, folks, of going and attacking 100% of the people because 4.8% of them own slaves? Isn't that a barbaric, intolerable idea? How could we possibly say that the fact that you live near somebody who owns a slave, although I think slavery is an intolerable and horrible evil, I think Robert E. Lee was absolutely right. I don't go and justify wiping out a neighborhood because one mafioso lives there, or because one kidnapper lives there, or one murderer. I don't say, look, there's a bad man that lives at 143 Main Street, and therefore anyone who lives within a square mile of him is going to have their house obliterated and you're going to be killed. I mean, this is not justification. It's not part of the Christian worldview to go and kill a bunch of people who are innocent of the crime. If indeed this was the crime, then the reason for going down there. What a joke. The idea that most people have today coming through the government school system, or even some of the private school systems, is that most Southerners owned slaves and were committing this crime of slavery, and therefore they needed to be punished. Not so. People were punished who had nothing to do with the institution. Even if they held in their heart that it was okay to have slaves, it's not justification to kill them, burn down their houses, rape their wives and daughters, and send them on their way to starvation, which is what Sherman actually did when he invaded the South, as well as some of the other northern generals. Brutal and completely horrendous, and no way can be justified. The article continues, in the rare instances when the ownership of slaves by free Negroes is acknowledged in the history books, justification centers on the claim that black slave masters were simply individuals who purchased the freedom of a spouse or child from a white slaveholder and had been unable to legally manumit them. Although this did indeed happen at times, it's a misrepresentation of the majority of instances, one which is debunked by records of the period on blacks who owned slaves. These include individuals such as Justice Angel and Mistress L. Horry, H-O-R-R-Y, of Colleton District, South Carolina, who each owned 84 slaves in 1830. In fact, in 1830, a fourth of the free Negro slave masters in South Carolina owned 10 or more slaves, eight owning 30 or more. According to federal census reports, on June 1, 1860, there were nearly 4.5 million Negroes in the United States, with fewer than 4 million of them living on southern slaveholding states. Of the blacks residing in the South, 261,988 were not slaves. Of this number, 10,689 lived in New Orleans. The country's leading African American historian, Duke University professor Hope Franklin, records that in New Orleans over 3,000 free Negroes owned slaves, or 28% of the free Negroes in the city. 28% of the free Negroes in New Orleans owned slaves? Amazing. This is a Duke University professor. To return to the census figures quoted above, this 28% is certainly impressive when compared to less than 1.4% of all American whites and less than 4.8% of Southern whites. The statistic shows that, when free, blacks disproportionately became slave masters. The majority of slaveholders, white and black, owned only one to five slaves. More often than not, and contrary to a century and a half of bullwhips on tortured backs propaganda, black and white masters worked and ate alongside their charges, be it in a house, field, or workshop. The few individuals who owned 50 or more slaves were confined to the top 1% and have been defined as slave magnates. In 1860, there were at least 6 Negroes in Louisiana who owned 65 or more slaves. The largest number, 152 slaves, were owned by the widow C. Richards and her son P. C. Richards, who owned a large sugarcane plantation. Another Negro slave magnate in Louisiana with over 100 slaves was Antoine Dubuclet, a sugar planter whose estate was valued at, in 1860, $264,000. That year, the mean wealth of the southern white men was $3,978. In other words, this was a very rich black slaveholder. In Charleston, South Carolina, in 1860, 125 free Negroes owned slaves, six of them owning 10 or more. Of the $1.5 million in taxable property owned by free Negroes in Charleston, more than 300,000 represented slave holdings. In North Carolina, 69 free Negroes were slave owners. Skipping down in the article a little bit, black Confederates and Afro-Yankees in Civil War Virginia, University of Professor, Press for Virginia, 1995, was written by Irwin L. Jordan, Jr., an African-American and assistant professor and associate curator of the Special Collections Department, University of Virginia Library. He wrote, "One or more curious aspects of the free black existence in Virginia was their ownership of slaves. Black slave masters owned members of their family and freed them in their wills. Freed blacks were encouraged to sell themselves into slavery and had the right to choose their own owner through a lengthy court procedure." Skipping down again a little further, in his book, Irwin L. Jordan Jr. writes that as a great conflagration of 1861 to 1865 approached, free Afro-Virginians were a nascent black middle class under siege, but several acquired its property before and during the war. Approximately 169 free blacks owned 145,976 acres in the counties of Amelia, Amherst, Isle of Wight, Nansemond, Prince William, and Surrey, averaging 870 acres each. 20 Roon Petersburg blacks each owned property worth $1,000 and continued to purchase more despite the war. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to continue reading this when we come back on the Tyranny Response Network.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network. Go ahead. Make your day.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben with Integrity Group. Why is it so difficult for Christians to be good stewards of their finances? We know that God works miracles in people's lives, but He has not chosen to provide manna from above to help us meet our needs as He did with the ancient Israelites. As Christians, we should be leading the way as good stewards. Since we do not spend money on vices like non-Christians do, we should be able to save more. We want to work hard and save our money so that we can have something to give to missions and to the needy. In addition, we want to regularly set aside a portion for retirement. Christians should not have to rely on taxpayer-funded government programs for retirement. No Christian wants to become a burden to their family or church during the ever-lengthening period of old age. At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. We are an independent financial planning firm. We specialize in finding creative custom solutions to meet your savings needs. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
Warning. Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
Well, today's show is an example of deep thinking and critical analysis. Where else do you hear a talk radio host talking about black people owning other black people and how we've been misled in history, tragically, by this tremendous problem? Well, at any rate, we're here on the Tyranny Response Network, and we are talking about this interesting article that was written by Robert M. Grooms, Dixie's Censored Subject, Black Slave Owners. He continues in his article, Jordan offers an example. Gilbert Hunt, a Richmond ex-slave blacksmith, owned two slaves, a house valued at $1,376 and $500 in other properties at his death in 1863. Jordan wrote that some free black residents of Hampton and Norfolk owned property of considerable value. 17 black Hamptonians possessed property worth a total of $15,000. 36 black men paid taxes as heads of families in Elizabeth City County and were employed as blacksmiths, bricklayers, fishermen, oystermen and day laborers. In three Norfolk County parishes, 160 blacks owned a total of $41,158 in real estate and personal property. Wow. Skipping down towards the end of the article, as with the slaves of his white counterpart, occasionally Ellison's slaves ran away. The historians of Sumter District reported that from time to time Ellison advertised for the return of his runaways. On at least one occasion, Ellison hired the services of a slave catcher. Slave catcher, it's not like a dog catcher. Terrible. According to an account by Robert L. Andrews, a white man who had purchased a small hotel in Statesburg in the 1820s, Ellison hired him to run down a valuable slave. Andrews caught the slave in Bellevue, Virginia. He said, "I was paid on returning home $77.50 and $74 for expenses." William Ellison died in December 5, 1861. His will stated that his estate should pass into the joint hands of his free daughter and his two surviving sons. He bequeathed $500 to the slave daughter he had sold. Well, and he closes the article by saying, "A truer picture of the Old South, one never presented by the nation's mind molders." That's not on the Tyranny Response Network, by the way. It's elsewhere. We just tell you the truth. We don't try to mold your mind. Emerges from this account. The American South had been undergoing structural evolutionary changes far, far greater than generations of Americans had been led to believe. In time, within a relatively short time, the obsolete and economically non-viable institution of slavery would have disappeared. The nation would have been spared the awesome traumas from which it would never fully recover through the American War, a war of Northern aggression that afflicted the South. Well, what a fascinating article by Mr. Grooms. I appreciate, Greg, you sending that over to us at the Tyranny Response Network. I had heard this when I visited Mansfield, Louisiana. I've been to every War Between the States battlefield, the major ones, at any rate, where there's actually a federal national park there. And I've also been to many state sites and have been interested in this for many years. What I did find in Mansfield, Louisiana, was that the people that headed to the state park program there readily admitted and talked about the black folks who owned other blacks, and that some of the wealthiest men in America in the antebellum period before 1860 were black people. Some of the wealthiest people in America were black even before the War Between the States. Isn't that amazing? Who would have known that hadn't grown up through the textbooks and literature we get through the American government school system, or even, unfortunately, through the private school system? Well, from a Christian worldview, this is interesting because we don't like to be deceived as Christians. First of all, we don't like to be misled when it comes to important issues of our nation's history, like slavery and what actually had been going on, as evil as slavery was. But on the other hand, some Christians would say, look, the Apostle Paul and nowhere accounts for slave rebellion. Is it okay for slaves to rebel and leave their masters and run away? Some would say, no, unless you can legally do it, you can't run away. Here at the Tyranny Response Network, at least in my perspective, that's false. If you can get away from being enslaved, legally or not, you should do it. And that's why the apostle says, if you can be free, do it. Well, somebody will respond and say, well, look, Paul sent, in his letter to Philemon, he sent Onesimus back to him. And therefore, Paul was just making Onesimus obey the law and return himself to the master. Now that he was saved, he was become a law-abiding citizen. Well, I don't read it that way. There's another way you can look at it, and that's this, that Paul justified and was happy with the fact that he was free, that this Onesimus was a great benefit to Paul. And Paul was suggesting, look, you're good to have me here, but I'm going to send you back to this place now where you're going to find your old master. And so he doesn't enslave you again or be tempted to do so. I'm going to send this letter along with you and encourage him to not do so, to leave you free as you've made your way. So go without fear, trust in the providence of God, and be content to whatever may befall you. And I believe that you'll still remain free because of what I write to this brother Philemon. So there are two ways you can interpret that. I tend to take the latter way, and I believe that's why we can, when we're enslaved, become free. Other Christians don't think so, and if you have a comment about that, you're welcome to call the show. They would say, no, if you're enslaved, you got to stay that way, and if you're an American slave now and you're under the feudal jurisdiction of the 14th Amendment and of all the other things they thrust upon you in the United States of America today, you have to remain that way. There's just no hope. You can maybe resist passively, but you can't just go ahead and rebel and run away from your master, the federal government. I don't agree. I think that we have, as Christians, an obligation and a duty to be good stewards of our time, our efforts, bodies, resources, everything else that God has given to us, and to be enslaved by other men is wrong. Paul says, you were bought with a price. Do not become slaves of men. And if we can become free, we need to become free. Read 1 Corinthians chapter 7 for yourself in the book of Philemon today and see what you think. Be a thinking Christian. Don't put your head in the sand. If you're going to say you have to be a slave and suffer for it, fine, but at least have a reason for believing that. And if you're willing to reject that notion and be those who seek liberty, that's even better in my view, because you will be part of the solution to the problem which we face in America, the tyranny that is brought onto us by the left and the majority of people that are so vocal in the activist groups like homosexuals and feminists, and in the public school, the secular humanists, the Darwinists, and all those who oppose the righteousness of God, the truth of liberty in this country. Paul tells you to be those, the Apostle Paul, as Christians, those who pull down strongholds and everything that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. And you need to be those who pull down strongholds, become informed, and don't be enslaved to men. And when you have an opportunity to be free, go ahead and do so. We're coming up to a break here. We'd appreciate your questions and comments again by email to questions@policyofliberty.net. That's questions@policyofliberty.net. And if you're listening live to the show here in Greenville or elsewhere, you're welcome to call us at 864-201-6955. Phone lines are open at 864-201-6955. We're coming up again to our break on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. We'll be back after just a couple minutes.
You're listening to TRN.
Tired of superficial and dull talk radio? Try some ear candy for thinking people. Listen to Liberty Minute with Dr. John Coben.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth. Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. As many of you know that the Tyranny Response Network is listener-supported, and here's Gene Papke to tell you how you can support the Tyranny Response Network.
That's right, John. Folks, if you support TRN and you want to help financially, here's how. We at TRN are a 501c3 listener-supported broadcast, but we don't take a notions, potions, and lotions approach to fundraising. If you own, operate, or work for a company with bad paper, that is non-performing assets, we can turn that garbage into gold. Simply go to our website, NPPros, that's N as in non, P as in profit, PROS as in professionals, your nonprofit professionals, that's NPPros.com. And remember, we raise funds, but without fundraisers.
Log on today to www.npros.com and find out how you can be a vital part in supporting the Tyranny Response Network.
Disinfecting the Modern Mainstream Media, Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.
Welcome back to the program. This is Dr. John Coben on Christian Worldview. We just had an email come into the show, and we have the last segment here coming up. We would encourage you, by the way, to support the Tyranny Response Network. I'm sure some of you are wondering how you can do that. If you'll just send an email to the show at questions@policyofliberty.net, we'll send you an email back just indicating how you can do that. Even if your monthly support or one-time support could be as little as $10 or maybe $100, we have a lot of needs, and we have a lot of volunteers here But if you like what you're hearing on the air, please support us. We're out there trying to spread the truth, promote liberty, promote the Christian worldview, and we do need support. We have equipment needs. We have overhead expense and things like that that are of an ongoing business, even above and beyond the volunteer efforts. And if you're able to contribute just $10 a month or $20 a month, or even a one-time gift of $100 or $200, we would greatly appreciate it. Send us a question or a comment to questions@policyofliberty.net, and we'll send you instructions on where to send that. We just got an email in from Greg, and it's a long email, and unfortunately, since we only have 6 or 7 minutes left in the show, I'm not going to be able to read the whole thing, or at least answer the whole thing. Maybe I'll read the whole thing, and we'll pick it up again tomorrow, the parts that we aren't able to get to today. He says, "Dear Dr. Coben, I heard your broadcast yesterday, and you reading the letter from that thinking person who is working on his eschatological millennial views, among other things." That was a recorded broadcast from some time ago, actually, Greg. But good that you did. Question number one, if you are a mill in practice, you do believe in the post-millennial return of our Lord. It is a mixed-up term. I believe that is a term invented as a reaction to overemphasized millennial views. Well, that's partly true, Greg. You do believe in a post-millennial return because we believe the millennium is right now, those of us who are a mill, and Christ returns after the millennium. The difference is that we don't believe that the world gets better, that there's a golden age period, and we especially don't see the state as having a role in that golden age period in reigning in righteousness. His part number two, amill means no millennium. No millennium? What is Christ doing now if he is not reigning and putting his enemies under his feet? Okay, so your question about the term. Well, I'm not a theologian, but I think that's probably true. Amillennium is not necessarily against the millennium or no millennium. It just means there is no literal 1,000 years. I thought that was the historical meaning anyway. Someone could correct me if I'm mistaken there who knows more about theology. The official postmillennialists, those who look for the golden age, are right about the other views being inherently pessimistic. That is, no reign, no victories, no putting enemies under his feet. Well, they have a point. That's right. And we're not here. We're not eschatological slaves. We welcome all different eschatological positions here at the Tyranny Response Network, and our various volunteers hold a different views. And I think that it's a good point you're saying here that Christians who don't hold to a post-mill view are overly pessimistic. And so I'll grant that. I appreciate that point. We have reason to be optimistic and to have hope, if nothing else, because Christ will return and deliver us from our own sinful bodies and destroy the miseries and wickedness of this world and reign, or bring in an eternal reign of righteousness. Part four, I met with a great Bible commentator, Dr. William Hendrickson, years ago, and we discussed this briefly. He is often referred to as amillennial, but he, being conversant in Latin, said to me that he preferred the term nunc millennialist, meaning now. I heard Jay Adams say that he preferred the term realized millennialist. Okay, well, I preferred both of those terms, too. That sounds good. But the fact of the matter is, unfortunately, amill is the label that we give, that we've been given, and probably need to continue to use rather than explain ourselves to this length by using a term that nobody knows. Fifthly, he says, is not our Lord bringing about righteousness and peace in the Holy Ghost even now? To say that there is no millennium, amill, is to deny the Lord's present work. It is indeed a pessimistic eschatology. Is the Bible pessimistic? Only to those who will not obey it. Well, Greg, these are great points, and I think we're talking about semantics here more than anything else. I don't know too many amillennialists that are that hardcore in their own position that they're going to live and die or die on a martyr's death in order to preserve this term, amill. Amillennialists just simply don't believe that the thousand-year reign of Christ is a literal thousand years that will occur on the earth, and certainly not one that's going to occur after he returns to judge the world after some alleged tribulation period. Those things are not the case for an amillennialist. The other details of postmillennialism that are rejected by amillennialists are that the world actually gets better, and when Christ returns, he's received into glory by a glorious incoming or reception of a majority of the world being converted and righteousness dwelling there. Where the amillennialist sees the world continuing as it is, not necessarily degenerating and getting worse, but almost going cyclically from good to bad, as we see in the scriptures, and that when Christ returns, will he find faith on the earth is a rhetorical question. Probably not. So that is the difference between post and amillennial, I think, which is more relevant. Will Christ come back to and be received in glory on the earth as a golden age, or will he come back and find very few who actually believe and take his remnant home to be with him? And I think it's the latter. Well, I appreciate your comment. Millennial issues in eschatology are very important, and Greg is prudent for bringing this up, because our millennial position will dictate in many respects what our Christian worldview is, especially towards public policy. If you're a post-millennialist, which I think is prerequisite for being a theonomist, for instance, a Christian Reconstructionist, you're going to view your efforts as having real and lasting effects in this present age, because what you're going to do is going to help bring in the kingdom of God, even by using the state or reforming government or these kinds of institutions. If you're amillennial, you have a more hands-off approach to this, and certainly it goes along more nicely and neatly with my view, the liberty of conscience position. If you're a premillennialist, you're going to end up bagging the whole thing in many respects, because there's no real point if things get worse and worse in even bothering to try. You might as well just do what you can to wait for the rapture and go, and many of them do. Well, we appreciate you joining us on today's show, and thank you for that thoughtful email, Greg. It shows that you're a thinking Christian, and we appreciate that that fact and you writing in and talking with us on the show and corresponding with the show. We look forward to you joining us again tomorrow on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on the Tyranny Response Network. For now, we'd like to wish you God's blessings and sign off for this day by saying goodbye and God bless you.
You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben on TRN. Join us again tomorrow morning right here at 97.7 FM on the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.